Welcome to In-Depth Studies Weekend. In-Depth Studies is the teaching ministry of Jeff Roker, which seeks to equip the believer with a theological foundation. All teaching is done from the point of view of the doctrines of grace and New Covenant theology.
Welcome to another edition of In-Depth Studies Weekend. I am Jeff Volker, the director of In-Depth Studies, and my cohort is Paul Honeycutt.
And I'm also part of In-Depth Studies and elder at New Covenant Bible Fellowship with Jeff in Tempe, Arizona. Jeff has promised last week, this week we're going to start and we're going to talk about covenants. What in the heck is a covenant?
Well, let's just sort of start in Scripture. Mm-hmm. Go to Hebrews chapter 8, verse 7, which is a little bit of a strange place to begin, but I think it is quite relevant. Hebrews chapter 8, of course, let's just give a quick context of what's going on in the book of Hebrews. You have these professed believers who are Jewish, who after prolonged persecution for their faith are now seriously contemplating turning away from the new covenant, which is the death of Jesus on the cross, and going back into the old covenant and with Israel. And so the author of the book of Hebrews, whoever he was, is his whole point in the book of Hebrews is that he takes every aspect of the old covenant and he says Jesus is greater than that. And that the old covenant in and of itself didn't do anything. It simply pointed to or was a picture of the work of Christ on the cross. So that is the book of Hebrews. So within that, you get to chapter 8, and they're now introducing the new covenant, which is the work of Christ on the cross. But before we actually get to that, in verse 7, they make this statement. For if there by the way, I'm reading from the NIV. If there had been nothing wrong with that first covenant, no place would have been sought for another, but God found fault with the people and said, and then he talks about a new covenant coming. But we want to address this issue of what is the first covenant? And in context, everybody would agree this is the Mosaic, the old covenant. That is the covenants being addressed. There's no controversy there. But why do they call it the first covenant? Because when you just think about it, as far as the order that covenants are introduced in Scripture, it's not the first at all. And so then you're trying to scratch your head. Well, from some point of view, this phrase, the old is the first, has to make sense. And so this is what we're going to discuss right off the bat. Why is this so? Because the author of Hebrews assumes that you understand sort of how the old relates to the new. He assumes that when he uses this language of calling the old or Mosaic covenant the first covenant. So what we'll do first is we will just begin to address, what covenants first appear in Scripture? It's as simple as that. And, of course, my background, for the audience probably doesn't know, my background, I went to Covenant Theological Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri, which is the official seminary of the Presbyterian Church in America. And I was what is now a PCA pastor after I graduated. And subsequent to that, I changed my views on baptism, or some may say I entered onto the slippery slope. And I became Baptistic, and then I eventually began to slide all the way into New Covenant theology. But usually, when you talk about covenants, you're talking about the Garden of Eden. And this, according to the model of covenant theology, mm-hmm. is that there is a covenant of works made with Adam in the Garden of Eden. And we would say, no, the Scripture doesn't say that. Because it's covenants in Scripture are what we would call a high-profile term. It's a term of great significance. And so here's – we have no problem coining terms to describe biblical truths like the Trinity. There's no problem with that. But where Scripture already coins a term, then we must submit to its own definitions. And so here in Genesis where you have – Genesis 2, we're in the garden. The Lord speaks to Adam, and he says, you can eat from any tree in the garden except for the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You eat fruit of that tree, you will surely die. That's all he says. classic covenant theology would say this is he is making a covenant with Adam. Adam represents everybody, and he's making a covenant, and it is a covenant of works in the garden, generally.
This is simplistic, but just for our listeners and just to be clear, the word itself, covenant,
is it
a contract? Is it a promise?
Yeah,
is it an agreement? What is it?
Some sort of an agreement. There's a variety of different types of these covenants, a variety. And context will tell you what type it is. But it's basically, if you could distill it down to its basic part, it's just an agreement. Just an agreement. And then there's all types of agreements. That's really what it is. But the bottom line is that as you're reading through Genesis 2 and 3 in particular, where there is no mention of that.
But the admonition, you know, you must not eat the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, you must not touch it or you will die. Is that a covenant? Is that a commandment? What is that?
Yeah, it's a law.
Okay.
They had one law.
All right.
In the garden, there's one law. You can eat the fruit from every, you can have a fruit salad, but you cannot eat the fruit from that tree. That's it. And that's, now, if there's more to it than that, and we would say that's always possible, then other scripture must speak to that and tell us that. Other scripture, God must interpret his own word, so other scripture would have to tell us there's more going on in the Garden of Eden when God speaks to Adam than is recorded. We understand the possibility of that, but we say, okay, then you have to show us other scripture in context that now refers to this. And we do understand in Romans 5, 12 through 21, where it describes that Adam did represent everybody to the extent that when he sinned in the garden, we are all blamed for his sin.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely true. So there is representation by Adam there in the garden because Romans 5, 12 through 21 says so. So, but nobody, but that's not really disputable as far as because Scripture says so.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're asking, is there more going on than that? And of course, my response is that there is no place in Scripture that says there's more going on. So then my fallback position is that's all God has to say on the subject because he's obviously absolutely sovereign and all wise and he's in control of everything. And Scripture is all that we need to know from him about who he is and how to live before him. So if we needed more information, by definition, he would tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are limited to this book of Scripture. So we were going to, at least at this point, we're going to move on our discussion and we're going to say in our little survey of covenants and say there is no mention of covenant in Scripture until you get to chapters, you know, chapter 8 and 9, where you have this covenant with Noah. You have the flood, then at the end of the flood, you have Noah coming out of the ark with the animals and sacrificing. At that point, now you have the mention of a covenant. So let's pick that up in Genesis chapter 9, beginning at verse 8. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be cut off by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on the earth. So this is, what is the nature of this covenant? Well, it's not salvation. It is a covenant of preservation. It is a promise, in effect, not to destroy the earth by water. And because it's not salvation, because it's not just made with man, it's made with the gerbils. It's made with all the little furry creatures, all living creatures. And it is a promise of God that I'm never going to, destroy this earth. We would say, especially in light of the rest of Scripture, until my plan to, save a people is accomplished. So this is a covenant of preservation. So it's not salvation, and it's made with all creatures. And so we talked about at the very last week on the first show about we're going to introduce this analogy to help you understand New Covenant theology, and it's the analogy of a football game. And, of course, I do conferences in Europe, and so, of course, we can still say football because, of course, they mean soccer. And but we'll use the analogy of the football game. We live here in Phoenix, Arizona, and I do have tickets because my kids first bought them for me a number of years ago on Father's Day. I have season tickets, cheap tickets, but good tickets nonetheless, to Arizona State University. Now, the football team has been in hard times, and I'm not sure it's all, it may not be worth keeping up those tickets, but nonetheless, I have those tickets. Now, when I go to a game, typically on a Saturday, the game is played on the field. Okay, the field. So you can't have a football game without the field. And, of course, at Sun Devil Stadium, the field actually has a name, Frank Cush Field, who was a very famous coach from a bygone era. And so we go to Frank Cush Field. That's the field on which the game is played. Now, the field is not the game, but you can't have the game without the field. And so salvation, God's plan of salvation, you can't have his plan unfold and save a people unless this earth stays intact. And so the Noahic covenant is the promise that the earth is going to stick around. Nothing is going to prematurely bring it to an end until God's plan is finally accomplished. He will save a people for himself and take them into a land that doesn't end. So the Noahic covenant is a covenant of preservation. And it is, as far as the analogy, we talk about the game, that when you go to a football game, first you go to the field. And the field is not the game, but you can't have the game without the field. And, of course, that is this earth must stay around until God's plan is accomplished as far as his saving purposes. So that's the Noahic covenant. Then the next one would be Genesis 15, next in line, just as you read. And by the way, to our listeners, when in doubt, just take out a concordance and look up, the word covenant and just see where does it show up. And this is not rocket science to do this. But the next place that we see it in Genesis 15. We have the God's covenant with Abraham, or the Abrahamic covenant. And we will read from Genesis chapter 15, beginning with verse 1. And so after this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus. That's his chief servant. And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars. If indeed you can count them, then he said to him, so shall your offspring or seed be. Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. He also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. But Abram said to his sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain possession of it? So the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abram brought all these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Then birds of prey came down on the carcasses, but Abram drove them away. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated 400 years. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure. When the sun had set and the darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, "To your descendants I give this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river of the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, Kadmonites, Hittites, Perizzites, Rephaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, Jebusites." But we're not mentioning the mosquito bites. Or in modern terms, modern translations throw in the megabytes. But those were very distinctly different folks. So what do you have with the Abrahamic covenant? You have, really, in effect, God's unfolding of his plan. His plan is that he's going to have a people and take them into his land. Because the promise to Abraham with his wife Sarah, they could not have children. So he says, I'm going to supernaturally cause you at an old age to have a child. It's going to be Isaac. And then through that child, I'm going to give you many, many descendants. Because first the seed is one, Isaac, and then he says, go outside, if you can count the stars, so shall your descendants or your seed be. So I'm going to give you a bucket load. And we know that we have Abraham through Isaac, Jacob. Jacob had 12 sons, 12 tribes of Israel. And, of course, we know at the appointed time through Moses they were brought into the promised land, Palestine. And, of course, when you're reading Genesis 15, that looks like that is the promise. Now, we ought to point out, though, you have the making of the covenant when God himself, you know, there's this smoking fire pot in this torch. It passes between these animals that were cut in two. And they call this, God was taking upon himself what is called a self-maledictory oath, meaning he's calling a curse on himself if he doesn't do what he said he will do. That is, provide the descendants, provide the land for Abraham and his descendants. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, this covenant means is there's no way it cannot be accomplished. So if we've just read Genesis, we would naturally walk away saying the Abrahamic covenant is a promise of God that he's going to give Abraham a seed, and he did. That was Isaac. And then through his descendants, he's going to give them lots of descendants, which he did. That's Israel. And he's going to take them into a literal land of weeds and dirt and rocks, which is Palestine, which he did under Moses. And then Joshua got that. But the problem is that to understand the full significance of the Abrahamic covenant, we can't stay in the Old Testament. You've got to go to the New. So turn to Book of Galatians, chapter 3. Galatians chapter 3. This is where we begin to understand how the Old relates to the New. And we're going to begin in verse 15 of chapter 3, but first just give you a very quick overview of what's going on in the Book of Galatians. It seems that the church was already established in Galatia, and Judaizers come from Jerusalem, and they introduce a new gospel. That is, believing in Jesus, death, resurrection is fine, but you must also obey the Mosaic law and be circumcised in order to be saved. So this is an issue of justification. How do we get accepted by God? And so the Apostle Paul, in answering this error, because he says, if you add anything to the work of Christ on the cross, mm-hmm. then you're opting into works, and which means you've fallen from grace, go to hell. And so what he does in chapters 3 and 4 of the book of Galatians is he gives a historical argument for the purpose. What is the purpose of the Mosaic law as part of the old covenant in God's plan? And that's what he does in chapters 3 and 4. So we are in chapter 3, and they're going to go way back to the Abrahamic covenant. Verse 15. Brothers, let me take an example from everyday life. Just as no one can set aside or add to a human covenant that has been duly established, so it is in this case. The promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. The scripture does not say, and to seeds, meaning many people, but and to your seed, meaning one person who is Christ. Now, when you read that, you go, wait a minute. I just read Genesis 15. He tells Abraham, I'm going to give you an heir, a seed. We know that's Isaac. No one quibbles with that. But then he tells him, I'm going to give you a bucket load of folks also. You know, if you can count the stars, so shall your descendants be. And yet here, Paul says, actually the seed is Jesus Christ. Now, how can that be? Because if you're reading Genesis 15, there is no way that's what you come away with. You would say, no. The seed is ultimately Israel and the land. The promise is the land. Paul says, actually, that's not quite true. In effect, the real fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant comes through the death of Christ on the cross, where Jesus actually purchased a people from every tribe, nation, and tongue. And Jesus is going to then take these people to be with him forever in the land that doesn't end. Heaven, then the new heavens and new earth. And so here he talks in terms of the seed is really about one person, Jesus Christ. And here is just the example of we must interpret the old through the lens of the new. That is, we need the answer key of the new to understand what is fully going on with the Abrahamic covenant. And, of course, the death of Christ on the cross is called the new covenant. So what we, in effect, have, and this is kind of fascinating, the Abrahamic covenant functions as an umbrella because it's God's plan. Plan is to have a people to take them into his land. And the plan is in two parts. First, it's going to be a picture. So he takes a physical people, the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, 12 tribes, Israel, and he takes them into a physical land, promised land, Palestine. Then, okay, that's the old covenant, but that's the picture. Then, if you're reading Galatians and the rest of the New Testament, they say, well, actually, the seed is really referring to Jesus, and then all those whom he purchased, most of which are this side of Pentecost, believers, the church. And so we're forced, if we're just allowing God to interpret his own word, to come to the conclusion that the Abrahamic covenant is revealing God's plan, which is to have a people and take them into his land. First, he's going to illustrate it through a physical people and a physical land. This is going to be the old covenant, Israel, promised land. Then he's going to actually fulfill it truly, which is about the death of Christ on the cross, which is producing a real people of God and taking them into a land that does not end. And so you have picture fulfillment, the old covenant to the new covenant, picture fulfillment, and that is the essence of new covenant theology. So going back to our original discussion in Hebrews 8, where it calls the old covenant the first covenant, from what point of view is the old covenant the first covenant? If you look at the game analogy, you go to the field, Noahic covenant, you got a field, the earth. But now the game is in two halves. First, there's going to be the old covenant, then there's going to be the new covenant. Picture fulfillment. And so from the point of view of the game begins at Exodus. Doesn't begin in Genesis. Genesis is prep time. If you go to the football game early, you see them, you know, lining everything up, and popping popcorn, players warming up, it's preparation for the game to begin. That's the book of Genesis. Now with the old covenant in Exodus, now the game begins. First with the old covenant, which is a picture, then the new covenant, which is the death of Christ on the cross, which is the actual fulfillment.
Okay, well, that's fascinating, and I can't wait to have you explain to me what the halftime is all about. But at any rate, good stuff. We will continue on next program, looking more into these covenants. Yes. And talking more about that. And as always, we want to give you, the listener, the opportunity to interact with us. And we have a number of ways to do that. We have a website, of course. We have email. We have a phone number. We have Skype. I don't use Skype. You like Skype.
I use Skype a lot.
You do a lot of overseas stuff. So along those lines, why don't you tell us just the number of ways people can reach you and interact with this ministry?
Sure. The website address, www.ids.org. The phone number, 480-924-4290. We prefer to talk on the phone. Everybody who knows me knows I do not like lengthy emails. And otherwise, Skype is just Jeff Volker. That's my Skype name. I am easy to find. We would gladly interact with you. And if you want more information, you want to deal with questions, or if you want to help support this ministry, support this radio program that we've just started, you can go on the website and get information, addresses, and send stuff in. And we'd be glad to help you any way we can.
And also find out information about the in-depth studies, theological ministries that are going on around town.
Yes, and we have a newsletter. You can find out about that on our email newsletter on our website, and we just commend that to you, and thank you.